Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shamba, welcoming you to the February 21st, 2020 edition of Ask a Leader. All hands on deck, listeners. Today, we've got some time-sensitive coverage. Please take note, take notes. Doug Elliott is my first guest. He's with Irvine Watchdog. He'll examine how Live Nation isn't just wielding their antitrust might around the country, but performing their own power dynamic inside Irvine's Great Park. Tonight, February 21st, that is, right now, tonight, 6:30 p.m., Irvine City Council's special meeting will consider the new terms that Live Nation has proposed for the amphitheater. So we'll get all the details from Doug. And in the second segment, UCI law student Edward Jew will cover the environmental law clinics mobilizing to reduce the harmful impact of fast fashion on the planet, including the collecting used clothing. That's already happened. And then they're going to host their environmental law clinic thrift swap February 28th. So put that down to count. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. My first guest is Doug Elliott. He's affiliate of Irvine Watchdog. He's been watching the negotiations of Live Nation with the City of Irvine City Council about the proposed project, a permanent replacement of the now temporary amphitheater. I mean, that's a big deal. It's a big public good that we all ought to be paying attention to. Doug is a native of Michigan, a product of North Tustin upbringing. He completed his Bachelor's of Arts in Sociology at California State University, Fullerton. His JD at the University of California Hastings College of Law, that's UC Berkeley. His LLM in International Legal Studies at Golden Gate University School of Law, and a certificate in International Human Rights Law at Oxford University. He practiced law primarily in the public sector in Anchorage, Alaska, San Francisco, and Los Angeles with a focus on labor law and administrative law. We need a lawyer. We've got one. And he retired from the State of California Civil Service 2011 and has been a contributing writer for Irvine Watchdog since 2021. He's now serving one term as an Assembly District 73 delegate to the Democratic State Central Committee. He comes to us today from his home in Irvine. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Doug Elliott.
Well, thank you, Claudia. I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, thank you. I call on Irvine Watchdog because it's a very selfless, a vigorous citizens holding lots of local things to account. So I get so much out of the work that everybody does, and I always thank them for their service. So let's start with, it's tonight, 6:30, as I mentioned, at the top of the hour. The council will consider this evening, could you give us, it's going to be providing direction to the staff with the nature and the size of a live music amphitheater planned at the Great Park. And the options are, one, pursue a 14,000-seat amphitheater with Live Nation. Option two is a scaled-down version of this amphitheater with a smaller footprint consisting of 6,000 to 8,000 with corresponding updates to the Great Park framework. So just what do you think an amphitheater, what should this public good do in your own estimation? Let's just personalize this before we dig into the details.
Okay, and I guess I should give a disclaimer of my own since I noticed yours at the top of the show. I'm here to speak my own views and not necessarily those of Irvine Watchdog. So
okay.
With that, an amphitheater can serve a number of purposes, but I think first and foremost, it's a community asset. It's a music venue generally. There can be other sorts of performances there as well, but usually we think of amphitheaters, I think, as a means of live entertainment, a venue for that to allow people in the community and the surrounding area to enjoy it.
Okay. All right. So the central issues, as the recent, it was last Tuesday night's meeting, was on the agenda. There were a lot of public comments, and the one Mike Carroll on the city council, he excused himself from the meeting, so it's deferred to, it's now a special meeting. The central issues deal with sound mitigation, with the program model, with the financial model as relates to Live Nation, and the calendar. So those are the issues that loom over this as we talk about the terms Live Nation has come back with in their recent iteration. There's a design construction operation agreement, and there's iterations of that. So let's talk about how those main issues are up for discussion still.
Okay, well, I guess perhaps to the members of the Irvine community, noise seems to be one of the uppermost concerns. And in prior council meetings, we've heard residents get up and say that with the temporary amphitheater across from the train station, people as far away as Woodbridge and Turtle Rock hear the concert noise, and particularly they hear and feel the vibrations of the bass. And what they have been saying is they don't want to live with that going on for the next 30 to 50 years under the proposed Live Nation agreement. So what staff has done is tried to study ways of mitigating the noise, and their latest information to the council is that they believe that after consulting with experts that under the 14,000 seat plan, they can't really guarantee that the noise, and particularly the bass, will comply with the city's noise ordinance. On top of that, Live Nation is saying that they're concerned about the city making their noise ordinance more strict and thereby putting Live Nation out of compliance. So they've got sticking points there. Staff is making the point that if they go to a smaller amphitheater, the city will have more control over the sound. What they say is that Live Nation, each group that they have come to perform brings their own sound equipment, so it's very difficult to maintain control. Whereas in a smaller facility, typically such as the Greek Theater, the owner, the city, maintains the sound system and is able to maintain greater control.
Okay. There's that factor. Then there's the matter of the program model. So Live Nation would be, there's a certain kind of arena entertainment, that kind of program versus what kind of other cultural events under a different management that would be made available to patrons in not just Irvine, but Central Orange County and anywhere that the train's going to bring people from, right?
Right, right. And basically, under the Live Nation model, they would basically be in control of programming. The city would have some say in it, but it would all be under Live Nation's management. And further, Live Nation would have, according to what they're currently proposing, is they would also have some control as far as ticketing and so forth of even events outside the amphitheater but within the Great Park, if they were over 5,000. The smaller model would allow flexibility. Live Nation apparently has indicated to the city they're not really interested in a smaller 6,000 to 8,000 seat facility. So they're telling the city, if you go that direction, you're going to have to do it without us. And the city has the, under the staff outline, would be in a position of sending out a request for proposals to various organizations, some profit, perhaps some nonprofit, to perform the necessary services in the smaller facility and potentially have a variety of promoters and not just one bringing in various forms of entertainment. So it would be more flexible in the staff's view, apparently, under that scenario.
And so that program model, where does that, whose management capacity is that drawing on to continue the programs at a scaled down amphitheater?
Well, I think they would enter into a contract with some entity. There are different models. Hollywood Bowl has a nonprofit organization that manages that facility. Here in Irvine, we've got the, on a much smaller scale, we've got the Irvine Barclay Theater, which has its own, management of programs.
And venue only.
The Greek Theater, I think, contracts. They had a bidding process a few years back to enter into a contract with an entity that does their management.
Okay. And then, as I mentioned, there's a calendar. And when I watched the last week's Tuesday night city council meeting, that the representative, Mr. Forsythe, came to talk about, we, at this point, with under the Live Nation proposal, there would be maybe up to four appearances booked in a year, and they're interested. They'd like to be able to perform upward of 20 or 30, I guess. So there's that. The calendar is sort of commands what we'd be having the opportunities to take in as patrons.
Right. And there again, I think the smaller facility would allow more flexibility in that event, because certainly with a smaller facility, Pacific Symphony would be, one of the focal points we would think of the summer programming, whereas it's kind of an afterthought, I think, in a 14,000-seat arena, because they're looking for the big stadium-type acts.
And if you're committing a calendar, Pacific Symphony has a Saturday night, but Live Nation, were they to manage it, they'd say, sorry, you can't have that. We've got, the A-listers are coming, and we're going to give them what they want. So it's sort of... That would put the onus on a for-profit entity to consider, well, what does Pacific Symphony get to schedule? I mean, it's a very interesting sort of a logistic for the kind. So there's the calendar and the programming are all, and the financial model. They're all those three things that are that work together to that would dictate what kind of a community good this would be like.
Exactly.
Well, for those of you who've just joined us, my guest is retired attorney Doug Elliott. He's with the Irvine Watchdog. He says he's speaking as an individual himself. So I know lots of Irvine Watchdog people contributing do talk on, different dimensions here. We're talking about the Live Nation proposal for the permanent structure to replace the temporary amphitheater. And that's, remind me, Doug, the temporary amphitheater is what's the top capacity at this point, where that base is coming from?
I believe it's 12,000.
It's 12,000.
So 14 would be a significant increase over that.
Okay. And that is in Irvine's Great Park. Well, the design, construction, and operation agreement, there's a number of iterations. There's one that you just discussed in a recent Irvine Watchdog publication there. So I think you are in actually a really good position to talk about. And it always fascinates me, I've worked in the public sector and as I have urban planning background, and I'm always fascinated by how local government entities always underestimate the leverage they really have with the parties they're negotiating. And so we can talk about that leverage and the transparency, the extent to which it exists in this negotiation with the latest iteration of an agreement. It's a mouthful.
Indeed.
So what do you see as the council's leverage here to, because there are a lot of costs in the design construction operation agreement and the latest iteration that the Live Nation would like to no longer, you called it a bait and switch in your earlier publication, but there is the city council's is online with the latest iteration to assume a lot of costs, while the for-profit, which we know is involved in antitrust kind of, litigation on the federal level. So what does the city, what kind of negotiation leverage does it have? And can we see it? Is it not problematic with the lack of transparency in these latest iterations?
Well, I mean, these are real concerns. I think the city does have the leverage. I mean, the council has a basic decision to make about what size of the amphitheater, and that dictates whether these negotiations with Live Nation continue or we go in a different direction. But if they choose to continue the negotiations with Live Nation, by my count, there's about 60 at least deal points listed in Live Nation's latest counterproposal that need to be ironed out. So they're a long way from any final decision, and who knows what direction it will go. But ultimately, if the city council votes to continue down that line, they are still going to eventually have to say yes or no to whatever staff is able to negotiate. And for all we know, staff may come back in a few months and say, hey, we're at an impasse on various items.
And staff includes the city manager, correct, in the negotiations?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So option one is, it would be on the agenda tonight, it's voting for option one or option two. If option one is the one voted on tonight, if three out of the five do, because that's how many are on the city council, five members. But the 60 deal points remain a negotiation there after tonight's vote. Those are still moving targets.
Right. And that's a very different picture than what we had in September, because the way it was presented back then, it seemed to be that we have, you know, basically a deal that we've reached tonight with a few little details, you know, to be filled in, some blanks to be filled in. Now it turns out there are many blanks to be filled in.
Expensive ones.
Yes.
So, and you published in your Irvine Watchdog the proposal. There's sort of a schematic so we can see how berms and lakes and all that can deal with that. So are those are part of the 60-point design pieces there? It's financial and it's schematic, the landscaping.
Yeah, now the agreement, if it is completed, would call for basically Live Nation to be responsible for design subject to the city's approval, generally. But there's a lot there that has to be ironed out. I think the city has tried to come up with some ideas to mitigate the sound issues and also to present a kind of conceptual view of aesthetically what the thing might look like, but they don't have a final design by any means at this point.
So I guess I'm struggling, Doug, with where does the city lose the leverage in how this would operate? I mean, even if option one of the 14,000-seat amphitheater with Live Nation, if that's voted on. So there are so many factors, and the city, once it chooses option one, does it lose some of its leveraged its power in determining those 60 deal points that you mentioned? I mean, what's the dynamic here in the negotiation?
Well, yeah, I mean, they would all have to be ironed out, and the parties would have to agree to them before, you know, there's a final agreement for the city to approve. So,
but will,
you know,
we see
all,
that?
All of that remains to be seen.
And we may or may not see. I mean, in preparation for this, I raised with you an interesting point brought to my attention is people would compare this transaction to one where a sports arena is being negotiated. But could you talk about the difference between what a sports arena is and what a cultural amphitheater is in terms of negotiations?
Well, you know, I haven't seen the inside of the negotiating process in either case, but I mean, we can draw some basic comparisons in terms of, you know, the basic purposes of the two types of facility. I think traditionally cities have constructed and operated a variety of, you know, cultural and artistic venues of various sorts. And it tends, for the most part, I think, to be on a not-for-profit model. So they're not, you know, they're trying to enrich the community first and foremost. You know, if they can break even, hopefully, or even make a little positive revenue on the venue, that's all for the good. But it's not intended really to be a money-making venture. Professional sports, of course, is a very different phenomenon there. You have private owners of teams that are, you know, often looking for government subsidies, and that plays out in various ways. The new football stadium in L.A., I believe, was built with private capital. San Francisco Giants tried for years to get voter approval of city funding, and the voters kept saying no. Finally, the Giants said, okay, we'll build it ourselves, and they came up with a beautiful ballpark. Anaheim, not so much. I mean, we've seen what seems to be very much a sweetheart deal in favor of the Angels with the city of Anaheim. And, you know, my concern is that despite all those differences, the Live Nation deal kind of looks to me more like that.
Okay, letting that sink in. So with along with the negotiations are the sort of different constituencies, and including a pretty, it was pretty apparent, there's a pretty elaborate sort of layered astroturfing of turning out. I didn't see any meetings prior to last Tuesday's, but do you want to talk about who's coming and how that is in making their case for option one, the 14,000 seater?
Right. Well, there's a variety of players involved. I think astroturfing is a very very apt term, because we had a lot of people coming in from out of town who you know, seemed to identify themselves just as music lovers that like going to big concerts in Miss Irvine Meadows and want to return to the good old days. And there's a Facebook page called Save Live Music in Irvine, which is kind of a misnomer, because we're going to have live music one way or another. We're just talking about the size of the arena. But in any event, there is reason to suspect, I think, just from the content and the juice that seems to be behind it, that that Facebook page is probably under the control and sponsorship of Live Nation in some way, and that they are the ones astroturfing, as you put it, bringing out these supposedly grassroots folks. Now, in addition to that, they had several different managers and employees of Live Nation out to speak on behalf of their interests, which I found kind of unusual, because usually when you have public comments and you have an organization or a corporation speaking, they have one spokesperson.
A representative.
They don't have half a dozen of them, so that was unusual. And I'm not sure if we have rules about that, but perhaps we should. And then, you know, the third category is just various folks that have some kind of interest. We had a lot of union members turn out who work in various different crafts, you know, stagehands, sound and light people, electricians, and so on. And they expressed concerns about jobs. And there are various other folks, as you mentioned, the Pacific Symphony president was out to express, not necessarily on behalf of Live Nation, but just expressing their own concerns and needs.
And so the labor also was the construction entity, the construction center. So there's all kinds of labor that turned out.
Right. Yes, the construction trades were present. And I believe also the carpenters, which I recently discovered is not part of the building trades group, which kind of surprised me. But anyway, yes, that was definitely a force. And the interesting thing is that in terms of construction, we're talking about a public works project under the state labor code. So whatever the size of the arena, they're going to have to pay prevailing wages and employ apprentices. So it's going to be a union project one way or the other. It's just a question of how big.
So I'd like for you to indulge us now and read each of the council members in terms of what you think their disposition on the council, the extent to which there's a legacy aspect to how they vote, and the extent to which Live Nation has helped them out in previous campaigns and could in future campaigns. There's those moving parts. So break it down for, we could start with whichever council member you want to start with.
Boy, that's, I need a crystal ball kind of to figure out where they might go tonight. One thing I will say is that last September, I believe it was a 4-1 vote with only Council Member Agron opposed. We're now at the point where we are, in part because he and Councilmember Treceder asked that this be put on the agenda with the option of a smaller facility. So I think Councilmember Treceder replacing Anthony Quo has been a major change in the council in many ways. It's not just a switch of a vote, but it seems to have altered the whole interpersonal dynamics in ways that are kind of hard to predict. But anyway, I see the two of those, Agron and Treceder, as presumably favoring the smaller arena. The mayor, Farah Khan, has taken donations in the past from Live Nation and also has been the beneficiary of a third-party expenditure that was partly funded by Live Nation that sent out a hit piece against her opponent, Brenda Lynn, in the last campaign. So that there has been some assistance given to the mayor from Live Nation. And so whether that will keep her in line tonight, I guess we'll find out. Councilmember Kim, again, with these people that voted yes last time, it's kind of hard to know whether they will change tonight in view of changing circumstances. Councilmember Kim, my impression is that she may be receptive to a smaller arena, a smaller amphitheater, but whether she'll change her vote on the basis of the new evidence, I don't know. And I really don't have any notion of where Councilmember Carroll might be on it. He again was a yes vote last time. He's a Republican, so one would think that fiscal conservatism would be part of his thinking. And that might influence him to go for a smaller arena, just on a cost basis. But there again, we'll have to see.
And the refrain at the last meeting was, go big or go home. And that's why I mentioned legacy. With that, you know, in preparation, there were a lot of people that thought, well, this is what the mayor's really, it could be, I don't say self-evident, self-evident isn't in politics, especially when we're dealing with transparency issues. But the legacy is something Live Nation is really tapping into with the council members.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well,
yeah, and I mean, council, politicians, I mean, they like to build things, I think, in many cases.
Well, that's, building is all kinds of things built, right? It's creating a good for the constituency. That, I mean, building is in so many levels. So how do you recommend that patrons, prospective patrons, residents and community members listening now prepare for this evening? There's a last question.
Okay. Well, I think that a good place to begin, if I can promote Irvine Watchdog a little bit, would be to go to IrvineWatchdog.org and look at not only my articles, but others that people have written on the subject. My latest one has a link to the agenda packet for tonight, which contains all the staff reports and supporting documents, as well as the Live Nation counterproposals. And also at the bottom of the article is a link with instructions on how to make your voice heard. And there are several ways. You can either email council members directly, which is a good way. You can submit e-comments on the city's form, or you can make a public comment at City Hall or on Zoom, which I intend to do. The problem with that is we're going to be limited to 90 seconds tonight because of the number of speakers. So you're going to have to say it quick if you want to do a live public comment.
Get your stopwatch out, get your salient points together, and be ready. Boom. Right.
Exactly. It's best to have it written out in advance and ready to go.
Well, if that's your last, did you have any other advice for people other than staying tuned? Because, I mean, we have so much skin in this game. We've got not just the eardrums, the skin, the fiscal skin, and the social civilization skin in this game.
Yes, I think that's very true, and I think that regardless of the vote tonight, this isn't going to be the end of the story, and it bears watching, and public scrutiny is always essential in these things.
So that's where I'd like to direct people to the Irvine Watchdog website for It's a pretty solid commentary. I know, Doug, you wanted to sort of distinguish yourself as an individual speaker and not on behalf of the organization, but I keep going back to that because it is an amazing way to keep track. And you do all the work so that we don't have to. We can just drop in on your website or a council meeting and see what's going on. But I so look forward to a venue we had freebies that were done outside in the old iteration, the earliest iteration of the Great Park. And I so glad we could bring this to my listeners' attention and others who are going to hear the podcast that, you know, we can enjoy this cultural gathering. It's so important.
Oh, I totally agree.
Well, thank you so very much. My guest was Doug Elliott talking about the Live Nation proposal for the permanent structure to replace the temporary amphitheater in Irvine's Great Park. Thanks a lot for your time today, Doug.
Thank you, Claudia. It's been a pleasure.
And again, that this is going to be tonight at 6:30 in the Irvine City Council. They'll convene to take up the proposal options 1 and 2. Stay tuned now for my next guest, Edward Yu, and he's with UCI's Law School's Environmental Law Clinic. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the show. My second guest is Edward Yu, bringing his ambitious project with the UCI Law School's Environmental Law Clinic, grappling with fast fashion by bringing a clothes swap on February 28th after the recent collection. The collection ended yesterday at the 3 locations around campus. Edward Yu completes bachelor's from Cornell University, majoring in political science. And after college, he matriculated in the International Relations Masters of Arts program at Seoul National University and fulfilled his mandatory military service as an interpreting officer in the Republic of Korea Air Force. Prior to attending UCI Law School, he was an assistant manager at the Korea Environment Corporation, where his responsibilities included participating in international sustainable development projects and providing counsel to the Republic of Korea delegation to the United Nations. You see how the law school admits the best in the country and around. He joins me in studio. It's such a pleasure. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Edward Yu.
Good morning, Claudia. Thank you for having me here, and I appreciate the generous introduction. I'm honored.
Oh, no, I'm always at the receiving end of being glad, happy, honored, and grateful and that kind of thing. Well, first, I just want to say how near and dear your mission is to me. I'm a frequenter of the reuse market, and I was trying to do an inventory before we went live. I think I'm wearing at least 2 reuse market items today. And you, are you wearing any reuse stuff?
Yeah. Actually, the pants that I'm having on right now is something I collected off my brother's trash bin. So but again, thank you for being part of the project that we have going on here.
Absolutely, and I'm going to swing by. See, after the show, I'll have to go by. Well, it'll start at 11 in the morning on the 28th and go to 2 o'clock. We know that at the Student Center. There's going to be big banners so people can see where that is. Okay,
yep.
Good.
Yep, they'll be.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this. The mission here, you've chosen to trim waste from fast fashion, and I guess this is one of many projects. So let's talk about what it is that you're trying to accomplish. Besides, you're creating a market, and you're in the process, you're educating everybody. So there's a lot of things. How did it start to come out during the collection phase?
Right. So one of our the Environmental Law Clinic at the law school, we take on these we take on matters. We take up active roles representing clients in litigation and policy matters. And one of our motivations, an important one of that, was to take action to combat the harmful impact of the fast fashion project on the planet. Because, Claudia, it might surprise you, but every year, the average U.S. citizen produces over 100 pounds of textile waste. Most of these end up in landfills or they end up being burned. Now, that's a lot of environmental harm to our earth. And I thought, me, along with a lot of my very thoughtful and motivated colleagues, And of course, under the guidance of our professor Michael Robinson Dorn, thought that we should encourage students to reduce this kind of waste. The UCI community, excuse me, to reduce this kind of waste by donating their clothes and then using these clothes that we'll be again having available on the 28th of February at the UCI Student Center.
Okay. And so I always want to point out, you're talking about the waste stream, but the waste stream starts with the manufacturing. If people are going to go through more fast fashion, then there's so the textiles that are, there's extraction and production. So there's the waste stream starts with that end. And then post-consumption is that waste stream. So it really does take in quite a bit. So are you noticing, though? Are you having an active role? Can you see how you're educating people and getting, because you were at three different locations where people are coming and going all the time. So you're sort of, okay, here's the download. Pick it up.
Exactly. We didn't want to make it look like, that it's just about, saving, reusing clothes and sharing with each other. On top of our collection bins, we had, a very nice QR code where students could, with just the top of their phone, they could see why they were doing this and how they're contributing.
And they were not hard to teach, were they?
Well, I mean, it's UCI law. Excuse me, it's UCI community. So, it's certainly not hard at all.
Okay. So I guess what you're dealing with, there's culture changes and there's marketing. And it just occurred to me when I was living in Barcelona for a year, and it was the reuse market. It was culturally not very well established. This was in 2003, 2004. And with the little Castilian that I understood, I can understand the little sign over the dressing room that said, thank you for overcoming your biases about wearing some used clothing item, something like that. So everybody, every culture has to sort of understand that, get around that market influence. You got to buy this. You got to, got to. So you're dealing with that one. Is that in your barcode? Information?
Yes, it is. It's basically, and again, the good thing, though, is we've collected bags of clothes, and students have been very, very, very thoughtful. Some of the clothes, they have been very healthy consumers, if anything. The clothes that they've donated are in very fine condition.
Oh, they understand the gently used part.
Okay. Exactly.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
Yep, and we will be, we'll be, having them go through the cleaners, because of the, of the times we're living in, of course. Otherwise, even if we weren't, we'd still be, but we're going to do everything we can to make these clothes as clean as possible and make sure that when it goes to the right person's hand, they will feel comfortable and healthy wearing those used clothes.
So those of you who just joined us, my guest is Edward Ju from UCI's Environmental Law Clinic with the fast fashion, we're going to call it the swap, the clothes swap that's happening on February 28th at the Student Center, 11 to 2, the morning to the afternoon. And so how is it going to work then? Just when I go there on that Tuesday morning, so I go there. Mm-hmm. Now, what am I exchanging?
Right. At the end of the day, because we have this process of where we're offering clean clothes, right? Well, cleaned clothes after they've been put through the laundry.
You could say processed in a way.
Thank you very much. Yeah, processed. Great word. So they won't be donating per se on the day. They'll be coming to the day, and they'll be coming to pick up the.
It's a pickup. It's not a swap anymore.
In a sense, yes.
The swap is what you've been doing all month.
Exactly.
The 28th is the pickup.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. That's a pickup. For the whole month, we've been collecting. Now, when we're done with the collecting, we're now in the processing phase, like you said. And on that day will be the day you'll be picking up the clothes.
Okay. So what about, are you going to spot somebody who's just going to, go and empty a whole rack? I still want to know how this is going to work. Is there a limit?
Right. We're thinking. So we want to. Obviously, we'd be happy to give as much as we want, but we want to be reasonable. We're hoping for a good turnout. So we're going to limit the piece of clothing that each individual could take.
To what?
We'd like to think it's 3 to 5, but for now it's not certain. But definitely on the day we'd be made aware. But you'd definitely be able to pick up more than one or two. Definitely.
It's a kind of a tricky formula because you don't want to take anything somewhere else. We know what you can do afterward, just like every estate sale and rummage sale where people know where to drop it off. But the point is that it's all moves, but you have to sort of phase it out over the 3-hour term.
Right. No, at the end of it, if there are leftover clothings and we we are confident that we won't have any.
Okay.
But we're also thinking about sharing this with the Mayor's Kitchen in Orange County also trying to contribute back to the society as well.
Okay. So let's, now it's kind of the storytelling. So mm-hmm. when you were in the collection phase and when you're developing all this, so what sort of anecdote did you get where people said, oh, I finally get it now. You finally convinced me. Or are there, well, at the front end, what are people actually learning about this in this process?
Right. Well, in terms of, yeah, right. There's just two anecdotes that were really good for
good.
Me. Yeah. The first one is how open a response to people were. They asked me, why are you doing this? Somebody saw me picking up these clothes and asked me, what are you doing? And I said,
oh, I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, this is the whole purpose. This is what we, please put your phone on the QR code right here and see what we're doing here and try to blink close if you can. And my Claudia, some of these clothes, the amount was so surprising for
really?
Me.
Really? Oh, good.
I'm so impressed by the UCI community. Their awareness and their willingness to contribute was just so amazing. At a certain point, I saw some new socks as well. Now that goes against some of our motives because
that's too fast a fashion.
Right, it's too
didn't even get used.
Exactly, we wanted something used, but again, we were grateful and we felt like a lot of people were motivated much more than I thought, and I feel like you know people are taking something. Very good, something good lessons away, and hopefully they'll also be the same thing on the 28th of February.
I unfortunately did not do the barcode part. I've been working on making sure we got the public service announcement up and running around here and preparing for this, but are you sending people to where this marketplace, the reuse marketplaces are in the region? Is that part of the barcode? This is how you can keep doing this?
Claudia, thank you. I think that's a great idea.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, we haven't. Yeah, you're
your
right.
Barcode
shame
can still change. You can still upload that.
Exactly. Shame on us. We will actually. Yeah, that looks like that's something that we should be pursuing.
Because you
part
want
of our
that
product.
To be a kind of a consuming pattern for everybody.
Yes, we want this to be a habitual thing. We want this to be a part of everyone's culture. And yes, you're right. That's something that's definitely that we should have. We should have.
Oh, you will
consider,
you're
and we will
it.
Do absolutely.
Because what I've have found in the reuse market is. One, like if you're traveling to another climate, there's every season is always in the reuse places. There's that.
That's true.
There's the quality. The fast fashion is low quality. So the reuse market has given you something one of a kind. I mean, some people aren't going to just be able to go to a department store and go to the section and get just exactly what they want. There's an uncertainty about what's available in the reuse market.
Right.
But if a person can budget a little bit and be intentional about the sustainability lifestyle here, mm-hmm. then I don't want to go into some of my treasures, but there are some really incredible old, very cool garments that I've gotten there.
Yeah, Claudia, again,
design porn. I could go in like, you should hear, you should see this vest, this wool vest with piping and all. But anyway, so you're sort of steering everybody back to quality because this fast fashion just unravels. The lining doesn't last, the hems rip out. It's cheap stuff.
Exactly right. I mean, I think it's just, again, so convenient. I know it's so convenient for people to just drop by a fast fashion store and pick up something that's not too costly. But then again, I think, you know, again, if we get this culture thing going, we're going to realize that, you know, that's just part of our life that does not need to be part of our life. And it's something, and it's actually having more of a bad effect than we actually think. So again, yeah, I think I agree with you 100% on that.
So are you also demonstrating those models out there where the A-listers are showing virtue in their decision to tour and they use the same garment more than once? I mean, is that also on your website?
Yep, it is. Yep, it
okay.
is. Yep, yep. It's all down there.
Because they are starting to do that. I mean, if something is lovely, it should be lovely time two.
That's
time X, you know.
Exactly. Absolutely.
What's your favorite reuse garment? I know that's catchy on the spot, but think about that while we're together here. So,
sure.
And again, with the logistics, so I go to the student center on mm-hmm. the 28th. That's mm-hmm. one Tuesday from today.
Correct.
And 11 o'clock to 2:00. And so, is there like some kind of dressing room nearby, or that people are on their own? Because in reuse market and thrift stores, there's always a dressing room.
you know, Claudia, I came here to advertise, but you're giving us more guidance than I actually, you know, was expecting. And thank you. Yeah, maybe that's something we haven't got that far. We just thought about putting, for example, pants in one corner and shirts in one corner. And again, obviously, you know, differentiate between men and women. But you're absolutely right. I think that's something we need to make sure accommodate and make sure that people are able to take on what they can use and what they can wear.
You know, there's another. This is a total riffing we're doing right here, but there's an annual reuse market opportunities where the performing arts school trots outside of where their seamstresses work near the Bren Center, and that's where you can buy used, you know, clothing for plays and musicals and dances, and you can buy them, and they always do it like 2 or 3 weeks before Halloween. So costumes are also possible. You can get a costume in the reuse market.
I did not know that, but that sounds.
Unfortunately, they may have stopped that with COVID, but it was going great. And in fact, I was sort of attached to some of my costumes, but there. Anyway,
that's a brilliant idea. Actually, maybe next time next time we're able to have this, maybe we should come up with something with them.
Will it be? Are you going to look at this and see that this will be a recurring?
Of course,
thing?
Of course.
Is that the idea?
The Environmental Law Clinic runs every year, and we want to make sure that this is just something that me and my colleagues do this semester, and it just ends. Definitely, we're going to have this as part of our lives, but we want to make sure as many people as on board in the ECI community as continual basis.
So, Edward, how do you find out that you've made an impact? How can you gauge meeting your goal?
My gouge will be again on the 28th of February next week. Again, please, if anybody is interested, come by, show support. That will be a good indicator to me of how well my friend, my colleagues, my professor, and I have done.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to going there, and maybe when you put up the dressing, some kind of dressing space, it can be a part of your clinic theater to kind of, draw attention, create a scene. And I don't know, are you going to get somebody in the administration to come by and sort of snip the ribbon, get going?
Actually, we are trying our best to, our dean, our law school dean, Dean Parrish, Dean Austin Parrish, we're trying to get him involved. And I know our professor's talking with him, and I know Dean Parrish is always, he's always very energetic about things. So from a law school perspective, for me, it doesn't get any more bigger than that. So hopefully he'll be there too.
Okay. So I want to thank you, Edward, for doing this and for coming in, giving us the time today.
Thank you, Claudia.
My guest was Edward Jew from UCI's Environmental Law Clinic, raising awareness about the negative impacts of fast fashion. That's, again, Student Center next Tuesday, February 28th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Talk with you next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Because I'm thinking I'm last year's runway passion, no longer in fashion, and I find myself obsessed with how you dress and whom you see when you're without me. If I don't